Jason Pruitt.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Michael Tomczyk, in for Mike Collins. As Charlotte's booming growth alters neighborhoods, there's a story playing out in Southend that illustrates how development can get people so worked up. That's our focus this morning in the latest installment of our series, Block by Block. Gaines Brown helped make Southend the vibrant spot it is today. Once described as part hippie, part party planner, he bought land in the neighborhood in the 1980s, back when people thought it was dangerous. Now he plans to sell the lot that includes Common Market and Food Truck Friday, and some people are angry about it. Gaines, thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you, Michael. Happy to be here.
We're also joined by Eli Portillo, who covers economic development for the Charlotte Observer. Eli, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And David Walters is an architect and town planner. He's also the former director of UNC Charlotte's Master of Urban Design program. He wrote recently about what's happening on the block in Southend we're focused on this morning, saying it's, quote, not the simple story of heartless landlords and greedy developers that you might expect. David, welcome to you too.
Nice to be back.
So that story starts decades ago with Southend as a barren wasteland, essentially. Gaines, what attracted you to it?
Well, I had a studio at 413 North Tryon Street, where Rock Bottom Brewery is now. And so I passed that site every morning on my way to work. And it was an abandoned industrial property in the middle of nowhere, next to a rail track that went nowhere. And as any creative entrepreneur would say, you know, if the price was right, I could make something of it. And so it took me quite a while to work it out, but I ended up moving in there in 1983 to the 1515 site where Common Market and KM Salon is now.
And David, what are your early memories of what that area was like?
Well, we've been tenants of Gaines for 25 years, as long as we've been in Charlotte, a quarter century. When my wife and I, Linda Louise Brown, who's a painter, we arrived in 1990. Linda was looking for studio space. A colleague at the university said, I think this chap Gaines Brown might have something. It's a bit dangerous, but go down. Not Gaines. Gaines is dangerous. But, and so we went down, and you know, it was affordable, an old building. It was affordable. And we jumped at the chance, but it was not safe. We never stayed there overnight. After dark, didn't work after dark. Homeless people in the doorways, bars on the windows, drug deals going down on the corner. It was not a place you would want to be. But for artists, other creative folks, it was affordable.
And you guys rented space for art from Gaines?
Yeah, for an art studio. We've been there 25 years.
And early on, I mean, how difficult was it to attract people because of, you know, the things David just described, the danger?
Well, I was mostly focused on my business, but I didn't have any problem because my business had connections with photographers and illustrators and other creative people. And there's always been a need for affordable studio space. And that was, to some degree, what I was trying to do is pay back a little because I rented affordable studio space from a woman named Mel Jackson's on North Tryon Street, and it was all about sweat equity. I could afford the rent if I cleaned up the space, and so as a senior project from UNCC, I cleaned up and renovated the space and opened what would be considered a metropolitan graphic design studio. And I've always seen the opportunity to give some other creative person the chance to make it on their own and start their own thing, and so I feel like to some degree, for 30 years, I've operated a business incubator.
And how did it start turning around?
Well, it was not a fast process. I thought when I first moved in, it would probably take 10 years or so for it to start turning around. It took closer to 20. But after I had been there about 10 years, I decided that I needed to come up for air. I worked all the time, and I needed a social outing. And so I was looking, I jokingly said I either needed to join a bowling league or a bike gang. And I got a call one day from an engineer friend of mine that was surveying a piece of property in Huntersville that turned out to be a Charlotte trolley. And so that intrigued me. It was not a bike gang, but it was a motorhead kind of thing. And so when I started looking into it, it was a fascinating story about how Charlotte had trolleys up until the late 40s. And at one time, Duke Power operated them. And so I thought, well, let's put together a proposal and see if Duke Power will sponsor the restoration of this trolley. That didn't work out, but once we had put the story together and the artifacts together, it was a story that the public really needed. So we ended up bringing the trolley to Atherton Mill and starting the restoration and opening up a little museum to tell the story of Charlotte's trolleys, in hopes of making that a part of the effort to develop a new urbanism kind of approach to that area.
How far did the trolley actually run through Southend?
It's so funny. When we first got it running, it was built in 1927, right there on South Boulevard, where the Circle Apartments are now. And when we first got it running, we didn't have any overhead power, so we actually operated it with a 300-foot extension cord attached to an old Lincoln arc welder. And we did that for several months, and Rolf Neal with the Observer and the Knight Foundation decided they were going to throw us a bone and let us put overhead wire up from the Atherton Mill door to the corner at Tremont, which was a little bit more than 300 feet, so we could retire the extension cord. And that was sort of where we started, showing that it really would run, and it went from the barn door at Atherton Mill to the corner and back.
And David, how much of a role can that type of, you know, project play in helping to turn around a neighborhood?
Well, I think most people would, with the benefit of hindsight, argue that that was a real catalyst project, particularly when the old historic streetcar ran all the way up to the edge of 277. It changed people's perception of how you could move in the city, because, you know, obviously we're a car-dominated culture, you know, almost everywhere. And this, apart from its historic overtones, the idea that in a fast-changing city there was some history left, that attracted people. But also, I think most folks would acknowledge that the trolley really laid the groundwork in public opinion for the light rail, which was fiercely opposed, of course. We mustn't forget that, you know, the light rail, which everybody celebrates now, was fiercely opposed for years by a segment of public opinion. But the trolley was a big catalyst in overcoming that.
And obviously, light rail has done so much when you look on the southern end of our city. Eli, how big of a role does that continue to play in development in Charlotte?
I think it's been really big. You know, since the light rail opened in 2007, South End has become one of the most active apartment building markets, not just in Charlotte, but in the country. Actually, last year, a firm that researches apartment construction named South End the most active apartment building market in the USA. And a lot of that has really been driven by the ability of people, or at least the perceived ability of people, because, you know, a lot of people still do drive into uptown from South End to get from where they're living to work or their amenities, you know, like Panthers games, basketball, bars, restaurants, etc., very quickly from uptown or from South End to uptown. So that's really driven a lot of this building, and this perception has totally shifted from South End being a dangerous, crime-ridden place to, when I moved to Charlotte in 2009, it was, you know, one of the places that you would look to rent, and still is if you were coming from outside.
So we have that combination of transit, of art studios. Gaines, I had read that there were also, you essentially threw block parties. Is that
yeah,
true?
Yeah, we started something. Actually, I was sitting on the board of Historic South End and speaking with David Haggart with his Childers Klein. And I said, you know, I've been a fan of Bell Shares Festival in Asheville for 30 years. I started going there when I first came home from Vietnam and watched it grow from being a couple of bluegrass bands on the courthouse lawn to being an arts festival that really just sort of inundated all of downtown Asheville. And then more recently, I had been exposed to the Old Town Arts Festival in Chicago, and I thought, wow, this is great. Get people on the street and have a good time and let creative businesses see the opportunity and the affordable rent and give local artists the opportunity to show what they can do. And it all just sort of made sense to me, and I think at the time my biggest objective was, let's invite people to come here, and they'll see that it's a safe place to come back.
And to fast forward, how did Common Market end up setting up shop?
Well, my business was in the building at 1515, and I built the building across the street in, 1989 or 90, where Elder Gallery is now. And so I had been interested in having something like the Common Market take over the space because early in 2001 or 2002, we started to sort of program the area. The Queen's Beans Coffee Shop and Clay on Camden Gallery occupied the building that's to the left of the alley if you're walking out from Common Market to Camden Road. And it had become a gathering place for sort of a bohemian scene. We had live music and a gathering place. And David remembers how much fun it was just to see people on the street at night. And so that business had to close because the city announced that even though we had sort of programmed it to start when the Charlotte Trolley operation was going to be running full time, that the light rail was coming hot on the heels of the trolley and that they would have to close the street for 2 years for construction. And the Queen's Beans couldn't take the loss of traffic. So when the opportunity came around, I wanted to try to replace that scene and that bohemian gathering place. And the Common Market's market and audience really fit that profile. I'm pleased to say that I actually introduced Chuck Barger to Blake Barnes. Blake was the original owner of the Common Market at Commonwealth. And Chuck was a successful creative that was looking for a change of business or, you know, career. And so when the opportunity came up, I introduced the two of them. They hit it off and saw the potential and moved in and re-energized the vibe that Queen's Beans Coffee Shop had started.
And then another piece that's become very well known in South End is Food Truck Friday. How did
Thank
that start?
I had a dear friend, Deborah Triplett, moved back from L.A., and we were looking at portfolio shots and street scenes in L.A., and I kept seeing these trucks. And I started, you know, like, well, this is really cool. I'm a graphics person, so when I see a truck that's got full-color bacon flowing down the side of it and says, get your lard on, I couldn't resist. That was really the thing that captured my attention. And then after a conversation and sort of scratching my head about why is this not happening in Charlotte, you know, I grew up here, so I know that it used to take 5 years for things to make it from the West Coast to the East Coast. And with the internet, it takes it only 2 years now. So I started looking into why the food truck scene wasn't happening here. And it was because there were some city ordinances that were really based on what we perceive as the taco truck scene, which is sort of a different thing. The new food truck culture is aspiring young culinary artists. And there again, to me, it was given an opportunity to set up shop and to do their creative endeavor off public streets. And so we actually started in October of 11 with branding the corner as the lunch lot with the tagline of eat outside the box. And then I got a call from city zoning saying that you can't do that. And I cited that there was a clause that said mobile food vendors were allowed. And so we sort of played with that a little bit. You know, I have great neighbors. Fat Burrito has been there forever. Steven's a dear friend. And I wanted to make sure I wasn't competing with him. And we had also started the art gallery crawl back in the early 2000s. John Stanislavski did the first 42 consecutive gallery crawls, and it was great. Saw people on the street. So we decided to try combining gallery crawl with a Food Truck Friday, and Food Truck Friday was born.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about the plan to now sell that lot and what could happen to Common Market Food Truck Friday. You're listening to Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the UNC Charlotte College of Arts and Architecture, presenting Amalgamation, the mixed media works of Albert Chong, September 18th at Projective Eye Gallery. Details at arts.uncc.edu. And Alta Vista Wealth Management, providing personal investment strategies, financial planning, and advice. Ned Zorrigan has more information at 866-684-2600 or altavistawealth.com. Author Clyde Edgerton is teaming up with veteran North Carolina director Steve Umberger on a new musical based on Edgerton's bestseller, Lunch at the Piccadilly. Retirement living may not be humorous, but the play is. Clyde Edgerton talks about its upcoming Charlotte premiere. And if retirement home living isn't your style, how about living in a tree? Pete Nelson, host of Treehouse Masters, shares how Animal Planet's show about tree houses for adults became so popular. That's when Charlotte talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis is released after 5 nights in jail for refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. America's continuing cultural divide over same-sex marriage.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk, and for Mike Collins. As part of our occasional series, Block by Block, on how Charlotte is changing, we're focusing on South End this morning. Gaines Brown is a South End pioneer who now plans to sell the lot that hosts Common Market and Food Truck Fridays. David Walters is the former director of UNC Charlotte's Master of Urban Design program. And Eli Portillo covers development for the Charlotte Observer. You can also join the conversation. Search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter. Eli, you had told me that the Food Truck Friday event and that lot in general was your introduction to Charlotte.
In a lot of ways, it was. You know, I'm one of those millennials you hear a lot about of moving to the city. I came here in 2009, and when Food Truck Friday really picked up, I felt very confident telling my friends who were in places like Boston, New York, and Washington, hey, come on down and visit. I've got something cool to show you. And, you know, out-of-town visitors I've brought here, I've loved it just as much as many of the natives. So it's something that I think has really become a signature event for Charlotte's emergence as a hipper city, if you will.
And certainly just among the folks I know, I mean, young people in particular, are really worried about what will happen to that project. Some are angry about the idea that that would go away. Gaines, back to you. I mean, why, after all these years, sell now?
Well, actually, I had the plan to use that property and the assemblage of that property for my retirement. Being an independent business owner, I knew I wasn't going to have much of a pension plan or in a retirement program. And having seen so many of my friends when they graduated from art school start into their art and be sort of trapped by the market. Two or three years later, they were sort of known for a particular thing, and that was what they had to do from there out. I started the exhibit design business that I ran for 35 years. To practice the craft and get the creative outlet that I needed, but also something that was marketable. And so I'm happy to say now that I'm moving on in my life and I'm pursuing my art, which is some degree of metal sculpture or assemblage with a little blacksmithing on the side. And so it's really been a long-term plan of mine to have that assemblage of property somehow fund my retirement. And so it's really, like I said, it's just a matter of me moving on. One of the things that I'm real pleased with, I just saw there was a blog this morning on Charlotte Agenda, and Mr. Dunn is the journalist, has suggested 7 different sites for Food Truck Friday to move to. And to me, after, you know, 5 years ago, nobody would have been concerned with it. And obviously not many people were willing to have them congregate on their property. But now it's become such a hot topic that people are clamoring to be the next site for Food Truck Friday. So I feel like a big part of my objective has been met in bringing a culture to Charlotte.
David?
Yeah, I think that really shows the role of things like Food Truck Friday. Food Truck Friday type things are not urban fixtures. They're agents of change. They come in, they transform an area, or they help transform an area, and then they move on. You know, it's a constant urban dance. So, you know, Food Truck Friday will just move to a new location because it didn't exist until Gaines magicked it out of the air. And so, you know, that was several years ago. For food trucks, I mean, they're a catalyst of urban regeneration and urban interest. There are plenty of other areas, maybe even some close by, that will welcome this extra little piece of regeneration. Food Truck Friday is not a fixed event. It's a mobile carnival.
We're having a little bit of issue there with audio. Oh, there we are. Okay. Gaines, back to you. That's this prime real estate. You have to have had a lot of offers over the years. What had kept you from selling until now?
Well, it really needed to be the right mix. At one point, I had a development plan working with Phazon, a local company that I've worked with for years on their trade show exhibits that go to Las Vegas, and I was real comfortable with the quality of construction and the planning staff that they have. And so we had a pretty elaborate program on the table in 07, and we just were lucky not to have pulled the trigger on it when the bottom dropped out in 08. But one of the concerns for me was that there was not very many opportunities to do something with part of the lot without prohibiting the rest of the lot that was already – the block that was already being occupied would have been devastated through the phase of construction to just develop the vacant part of the lot. The most recent proposal that came to me that I was hoping to make it work was a boutique hotel that has, in other locations, used existing buildings to create some character to a boutique hotel. And I felt like South End could use a boutique hotel because its proximity and rail connection to the center city. But when we looked at different development plans and trying to do it in phases, the first phase would have put the other the existing businesses out of business through the construction phase. And then when I was approached by Cousins, who I was impressed with what they did with Gateway Center on West Trade Street years ago and the quality of construction and the architectural team and the intent, I started looking into it and realized that there's a certain evolution that when a district becomes highly dense residential, the next market is really office with mixed use. And I felt like that was something worth paying attention to. And then when I saw the architectural team and some of the projects they've done, I was totally impressed. And the fact that one of my concerns for the last couple of years has been the fact that limited parking has sort of strangled the community. And so Fat Burrito and Common Market and all the other arts and creative businesses there share parking, and it's not enough to sustain themselves. My thought was that if a quality office building is built with 300 or 400 parking spaces, that after the 5 or 6 o'clock office worker goes home, hopefully living there in South End and walking to work, then they'll make available parking for the businesses that really have not got parking. If you think about it, those buildings were built in the 20s and nobody needed parking space. So light rail combined with some parking for after hours felt like it was really sort of a well-rounded scenario.
David, as far as you mentioned the shift from residential to office, there are so many apartments going up, already up in South End. How important is it that, you know, this project would potentially end up being office space as opposed to an apartment?
I think it's extremely important. It's a point that many people make, that for an urban area to be successful long term, you have to have a mix of uses, you know, exactly as Gaines said. And, you know, the way the market plays out in, you know, contemporary America means that these increments are sort of larger rather than smaller. That's just the way development finance works. It's very hard for small enterprises to, you know, stay afloat in this mix. But long term, I mean, we've seen an area, you know, 3 decades from being a dangerous slum to being the hottest market in America. That's an amazing graph. If you actually did a graph of that, it would be astonishing. So, you know, like all stories, there's upsides and downsides. But the role of the art and small business entrepreneur is to change city areas. Once they've changed, that's job done. You got to move on. That's what happened in Noda. It's what's happening in South End. It's probably going to happen next in Fremore West, that newly branded area, you know, around Freedom Drive, and who knows where. You know, folks like us aren't the shock troops anymore. You know, Gaines and I are, you know, getting ready to retire. So it's a new generation who are going to redefine a new part of Charlotte as being the cool location. The only worry I've got is that we don't have many older areas with a good street and pedestrian infrastructure like South End, a street like Camden where Gaines could organize block parties. If you go out Wilkinson Boulevard, you can find plenty of cheap old buildings, but they're 1950s sheds. in parking lots. And so you can't build that cool vibe really at all. So that's a big worry about, you know, we need an old walkable area that's down on its heels. If anybody knows of one, you know, let us know.
Eli?
And I think that you touched on an issue that gives a lot of people anxiety, which is these buildings are, excuse me, some of the oldest walkable buildings around uptown. And a lot of what's been built in South End is in large blocks. And while it's connected with walkable sidewalks, these blocks, mega apartments, tend to not have retail. They tend to not have anything on the ground floor to engage pedestrians. And I think a lot of people are sort of anxious about where that will come from next. These new buildings that we're building in huge mega blocks really don't create a streetscape that's comparable to what's at Camden and Tryon right now.
That's exactly right. And there are several villains in that story. Some of them are just, you know, numbers, you know, the building codes, how those buildings are built, the lack of strong zoning codes that the city has, which allows large blank areas of parking at street level. Other cities have more progressive zoning codes that don't allow that. Charlotte allows it. And so if it's allowed, developers are going to do it because it's cheaper. And Eli's exactly right that the quality of pedestrian space, even though South End is hopping, with activity, a lot of the sidewalks are dead because who wants to walk along, a blank wall with openings with bars on and cars on the other side? So it's the city in their reworking of the zoning ordinance. It's too late for South End, but they've got to change the zoning ordinance to disallow that kind of large block, dead block front.
These zoning ordinances are the type of things that can be a hopelessly wonky part of the law. Eli, you wrote a fantastic article recently explaining them. Let's start with you on that. I mean, what is the city looking at in changing these things? And how does that actually make a difference in how the neighborhoods grow?
Well, I know when people hear zoning ordinance, they don't really, you know, tend to get super excited. And
really?
More people want to take a nap. But they're extremely important. And Charlotte is actually at a moment right now where the city is launching a rewrite of its zoning code that's going to probably take about 4 years, the city says. I know David thinks it should go faster. But there's a lot of opportunity for the city to adopt more progressive codes that call for better streetscapes, ground-level retail and new construction, these things that really make cities more walkable and livable on a human scale versus, say, a car scale. And I think that there's sort of a lack of translation in people's minds as to how important these are, because until someone proposes building a drive-through next door to you, most people don't care about zoning. Once someone proposes that drive-through, you know, fast food restaurant next door down the block from you, suddenly people start caring quite a lot about zoning.
And that can be the zoning can be the difference in whether that drive-through comes in.
Right, exactly.
David?
I mean, the key thing is to recognize that Charlotte, you know, the planners in Charlotte, are actually pretty good in many ways. The city does a lot of very good urban planning. It gets high-density mixed use along transit routes exactly where it should be, because if you put density there, it doesn't get into the adjacent neighborhoods. So it does good urban planning, but the zoning codes don't deal with urban design, which is exactly these issues of what it's like to walk around, what creates a cool vibe, and the old buildings, which we are losing, provided that because that's just the way Americans lived 100 years ago. We don't live that way now, and the zoning codes have just wandered off where everything, even in South End, you put the car first.
I'm wondering, though, I mean, does this – so the zoning can help with what the plan is, but decades later, I mean, does the plan actually hold up? I mean, this block we've been talking about, Gaines, I mean, what was the original – plan for it? Was it eventually tons and tons of apartments?
No, it was actually my desire to always see that it was a mixed-use development, just to offer that 24/7 sort of lively atmosphere. But that's part of the reason I think I took seriously the proposal from Cousins. They are a real estate investment trust. So they're not bound by the same numbers sometimes that an apartment developer may have. And when they build something, they build it to last. It's not temporary. It's not something they're trying to flip. It's there, and it's going to be there for a long time, and it's going to be done right. Structured parking was always a prerequisite for my interest in seeing that happen, because I get tired of seeing a sea of asphalt between the street and the building. Structured parking is the solution to a lot of what I see the future problem of South End being. And I feel there's a strong commitment on the developer's part to make social gathering space and streetscape pedestrian environments that will be something to be proud of.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you selling this as part of at least what was your plan of this was a long-term investment. How much are you making on it? How much does this set you up for retirement?
I should be comfortable in retirement, but I'm of the Southern culture that finances and numbers are something you don't discuss. And at this point, I don't feel it's appropriate.
Okay. Tamla on Facebook says she wants the owner to make a return on his investment. What she does not want is for it to look like the planned project. She asks, is there a way this property could be purchased and left as it is?
I'm sure anything's possible, but I think the challenge is finding new places to create something new that takes its place. And like the efforts right now being made to relocate Food Truck Friday, I know Common Market is looking at various places to expand their operation and then hopefully come back to the site after the construction. So I think it's an opportunity for Common Market to grow and to expand and to have more presence in different neighborhoods. And I see it's an opportunity to put something that will suit the needs of the South End and be aesthetically pleasing.
David?
Yeah, the sort of lower scale development that the caller or the, wanted, more intimate, that only happens if you've got lots of different property owners owning small pieces of property that get developed. One here, one there, over time. That isn't the way that Americans own property anymore. You know, that the idea that the old traditional Main Street had, 20, 30 property owners, and so it evolved. Now, the minimum size any developer will touch is a block or half a block. They're not bad people for that. It's simply the way that the finance works, how lenders lend money. Lenders won't lend money on the kind of small incremental project nearly as easily as they'll lend it on the big project. So it's a multi-layered issue. And it's back to my previous point that kind of small-scale incremental urbanism, we're desperately short of places in Charlotte where that can work. South End was one of the last. I think it's the job of young folks. This is all over to you, Eli. You're the much maligned millennials.
We're on it.
It's your job to work out where this goes, because there's this energy. Charlotte now has energy, which is a wonderful legacy. From 30 years, Gaines and other folk like him have energized Charlotte, and that's a wonderful legacy in itself.
We'll keep this conversation going after a short break. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Southern Ideal Home Show, over 200 home improvement companies with products and trends in kitchen and bath. Tomorrow through Sunday, the Park Expo and Conference Center, southernidealhomeshow.com. And Henderson Properties Realtors hosting a grand opening event with food, games, Wild Dunes drawing, and school supply drive. Saturday, 10 to 2 at 5110 Park Road, hendersonhomescharlotte.com. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis is released after 5 nights in jail for refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. On the Diane Rehm Show, they'll take a look at America's continuing cultural divide over same-sex marriage. That's the Diane Rehm Show after Charlotte Talks at 10 here on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to join our discussion today, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter.
John Boyer, President and CEO of the Beckler Museum of Modern Art, a WFAE underwriter.
It's made a big difference in our general attendance. We always ask where people have heard about us, and it just seems more and more it's WFAE. Smart businesses that want to reach the most informed audiences will have to look at public radio and what it can bring them.
For more information, email underwriting at wfae.org.
This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk. We're discussing the building boom in Southend and how some worry the neighborhood will become just another sea of apartments and offices, a far cry from its funky past. Southend pioneer and landowner Gaines Brown, town planner David Walters, and Charlotte Observer reporter Eli Portillo are here in studio. We'd also love to hear from you. Email charlottetalks at wfae.org. Our social media question, what do you think about all the recent development in Southend? Let us know on Facebook or on Twitter at WFAE. Gaines, you mentioned before the break that the Common Market owners are looking to relocate. Any update on where that shop may go?
No, but I sort of see it the same as the food truck situation. This situation that we're discussing now has made the food trucks a lot more approachable, and there's people coming out of the woodwork to invite them to their neighborhoods. I can't help but feel that the Common Market's going through some of the same thing. When people realize they may be relocated, then they're welcoming them to a new community. And I think it's, in the big picture, I think it's really good for Common Market to have the opportunity for the exposure and the invitation from different areas for them to become part of the scene. Common Market's an incredible social gathering place. And I think there's a place for it in every corner and nook of the city. So I'm sure that they're smart people. They'll be looking at good locations. And I'm sure every one of those locations will welcome them to the community.
Eli, in other examples of redevelopment, what often happens to the businesses that were there?
Well, there's been a lot of this happening in Charlotte lately, where there have been older businesses. In many cases, they've become neighborhood favorites that are being displaced by potential new development. For example, in Elizabeth, there's a plan right now to build an apartment building where Jackalope Jack's is. Now, that construction probably won't happen for, you know, at least another year and a half, 2 years. But people there are very concerned. And it's the same sort of dynamic. In a lot of cases, older businesses have prospered because they're in older buildings, they have cheaper rent, and they can't necessarily go in, nor do they necessarily want to go into brand new construction because it doesn't really fit their vibe. So I think what you could see is a lot of these businesses, as Gaines said, disperse to other parts of the city. You know, there are areas right now that are Southend 30 years ago, potentially. There are areas that people consider dangerous, crime-infested, but that someone is looking at and saying, this could be hip. And I think that you'll see these businesses start to move to those new areas, and some of those areas will start to prosper, and maybe in 30 years we'll be worrying about development somewhere along, say, Freedom Drive.
And Gaines, as Eli was talking about, there are these other examples. I think it's the rash of these things and how Charlotte is changing so quickly that is part of what is getting some people so worked up. Some folks have called you a sellout for, you know, deciding to sell this now. What do you think of that?
Well, I think, first off, that those people probably really don't know me, and that's okay. I have heard some really encouraging words of support from my tenants and former tenants. So I don't feel like I'm the world's worst person. But I ran across something last week that I found really fascinating. It was on Mary Newsom's website called Plan Charlotte. And it was a 1945 brochure that was published by the Chamber of Commerce. And it was boasting about Charlotte having slightly more than 100,000 people in the city. And there were five or six institutional buildings that are no longer there. And there were a whole list of businesses that were promoting themselves in 1945 that are only a memory to those people that are older than myself, if anybody can be that. So it is evolution, and time marches on. But it's really interesting. Like I said, Plan Charlotte was the website. There's a brochure from 1945. That was based on the 1940 census, and it was really fascinating to see how Charlotte has evolved since then, and I can't help but think that it's going to continue to evolve and be a progressive southern city.
And on the other side of that anger, I mean, there are probably a lot of Charlotte business leaders who would say that it's a great thing that a company is moving its East Coast headquarters to South End. I mean, Eli, tell us a little bit about the company and how many jobs.
Well, it's a company called Dimensional Fund Advisors. They're based in Austin, Texas, but they're building an East Coast hub headquarters in South End. You know, they announced in July that they're moving here, bringing 316 high-paying jobs. They are getting about, I think, $18 million in state incentives, but they're planning on investing $105 million in the city. So business leaders and, you know, the state economic development people are very happy about this. The governor actually came down here and made the announcement. So it's a big win from that perspective.
And do we know if those jobs will be high paying compared to our current wages?
Well, it depends on your current wages, but they're mostly financial jobs, so I think they'll be pretty good.
Above the Mecklenburg median, most
yes.
likely.
Mm-hmm.
This balance between the business development and, you know, sort of the funk, so to speak, I guess fundamentally that's what a lot of gentrification, redevelopment is about. I mean, David, how do you figure out as a city the right way to manage that?
Well, that's, I think, the huge challenge that we face because, you know, I have to return to a point I made earlier about for these cool, funky places to evolve, there's got to be the right kind of infrastructure. That's a nerdy word, I know, but it's got to have streets that connect. It's got to have sidewalks for people to walk. It's got to have a range of different kinds of things so happening. And Charlotte was small enough back, you know, 50 years ago that there wasn't this large reservoir of old sort of semi-industrial areas. There were some, South End, what we call South End is a prime example. But as the private sector, as the entrepreneurs move out looking for new places, I think the city has a real policy challenge here. The extent to which the city might go in retrofit some infrastructure in these car-dominated suburban strips that might help engender this kind of private sector initiative. Because it's small-scale private sector initiative. They're not going to take blocks and build new streets. And because Charlotte doesn't have nearly enough of those kinds of areas, one possibility, and I use that word advisably, possibility is that the city might take on a role of looking at being a partner in providing infrastructure that would, you know, smaller blocks, plenty of connections, walkability, bikeability, adjacency to bus routes. You know, there's only one transit line, so we can't extend that sideways, so to speak. But there's a lot of things that have to come together to help nurture private initiative. And the city might have a role in that. It might have to have a role in that.
We do have the modern example now of a trolley that is going sideways through the city. But Eli, among the council, as an example, we have a mayor's race going right now. There's been a lot of opposition to that because, David, as you talk about the city partnering, essentially a lot of people just hear that means taxpayer money.
Right. And I think, it's important to remember that Charlotte is in many ways still a very suburban city. We have huge developments sprawling out around the outer belt, and people are still building plenty out there. So while we're focusing on the urban core, I think any discussion of transit, walkability, bikeability is really going to be influenced by the fact that much of the city is not going to live that way based on just the geographic patterns we have set up.
David?
I mean, to a certain extent, this, you know, the urban lifestyle is a niche market, but it is a huge niche. I mean, the millennials, again, they're the biggest demographic group ever in America. And the power of that group to influence markets is immense. So I think while we'll still build a lot of suburbs, at least for the next 20, 30 years, and then we'll realize, oops, that was a mistake, and it'll be too late, but that's another program, things like the streetcar, I was desperately disappointed to hear some of the mayoral candidates state their flat-out opposition. They could do more harm to Charlotte than any other single individual. Those mayoral candidates who want to kill the streetcar could irreparably harm the city because they're killing the kind of infrastructure spread that will support exactly the kind of development that everybody is on about. We want this cool, funky stuff. Well, guess what? The streetcar, over a period of a decade, will bring that. So anybody who wants to kill the streetcar is saying, I want to kill life in Charlotte.
That's a bold way of putting that.
It's true.
Gaines?
Reminiscing here a little bit, but I'm pleased to see the streetcar take place. And Clay Grubb that did it at Elizabeth was right on target with what he was doing. I'll take great pride in the fact that in 1994 I presented that concept to take a streetcar from Johnson C. Smith to Central Piedmont and up Elizabeth Avenue to who was mayor then was Richard Venroot. Hugh McCall was in that meeting, Wendell White, city planner, and it was proposed as the second leg of what then was being proposed as Charlotte Trolley's line between Atherton Mill and 9th Street. My hope at that point was that the trolley into South End would be a tourist destination as well as a commuter vehicle and bring people to South End for entertainment in the evening and cultural events and that sort of thing. We used to refer to it as the opportunity to connect all our cultural pearls through downtown with the Blumenthal and Discovery Place. And so it was a little disappointing to me when Katz opened up and was just looking at it as a commuter rail line and not an amenity that would create some more tourism and give Charlotte a sense of character, like San Antonio's Riverwalk, for example.
The character of South End, the way it's developing 5-10 years from now, Gaines, do you think you would still want to be there?
Oh, I'm sure there's niches and corner spots and dark alleys that I'd be happy to investigate and invest in. But I think there's a lot more opportunity for future investors in other directions. Charlotte's, not limited to the southeast quadrant, although that seems to be where the predominant development takes place. Freedom Drive and Wilkeson Boulevard both are areas that I think are sort of the new frontier.
And for example, there's a company called Argos that actually just announced a project to revitalize a building in West Charlotte. The exact address eludes me, but it's going to be a brewery, retail spot, and it's a repurposed industrial building. And it's kind of the first pioneer in that area west of Johnson C. Smith. So I think you're going to start seeing movement out of these established cool nodes that are maybe becoming a little overdeveloped into underdeveloped areas as people like the next generation of Gaines Brownses look for those opportunities.
And David, how do you make sure that those things happen in walkable areas? Or are there walkable areas?
Well, I mean, at the risk of sounding like a one-trick pony here, this is a huge challenge because once we got out of the Depression and through the trauma of the Second World War, our whole vision of building cities was around cars. We even stopped building sidewalks. So the pedestrian and bicyclist had no role in any American city, really, except the older ones like Boston, New York, etc., until the 1990s when we began to start retrofitting. And retrofitting is expensive. It's controversial. But it's an essential element. You've got to have nice spaces for pedestrians to be. We don't, once we get out of high school, we don't really, gather in parking lots. It's not a whole lot of fun. They can be enlivened once a week by food trucks, which is great. And I think that kind of thing will happen. And we'll see some markers like that in various areas of the city. The food trucks might even become itinerant, enlivening neighborhoods in sequence. And so, one looks for small markers. This isn't going to happen overnight. Gaines, you thought it would take 10 years. It took 30. I don't think the next South End will take 30, but it'll take at least a decade. And it will probably need some city involvement in terms of retrofitting infrastructure.
Gaines, part of your initial vision for changing South End was art. That's played a huge role in NoDa as well. Can artists still afford space in South End or in NoDa?
It's getting tough, But I think that's the challenge, and I think the artists will find those spaces that they can afford, and their presence will make the difference. A lot of my vision was stimulated by a visit to the Torpedo Art Factory in Alexandria, Virginia, in 1969 or 70, and it was an old industrial building that was divvied up into studio space with gallery space for each of a group of studios. And when I first saw the buildings in South End, I thought this is a perfect way to bring some life back into them. I'm pleased to have kept those buildings where they are for the last 30 years and kept them out of the landfills and kept them full of wonderful, creative people that have made excellent tenants and wonderful neighbors.
But as rent goes up in these other spots, when we hear about development via breweries as an example, is there as much development that's linked to art as it was, in generations past?
Well, as I have to mention, that my wife, Linda Brown, is a working Charlotte artist, has been for 25 years here, and that's been courtesy of low rents in old buildings. And there's a difference between an art area which is full of content providers, i.e., working artists, be they painters, musicians, web designers, creative chefs. They're, people like my wife are content providers. Then there's the class who are consume art. And Noda has become overrun by consumers. South End is being overrun by consumers. And so the content providers are always on the move. My wife and I feel amazingly lucky to have found a perch for 25 years. That's unusual.
That's all the time we have this morning. Gaines Brown is one of the people who helped turn South End into the vibrant center it is today. David Walters is a longtime town planner and former head of UNC Charlotte's Master of Urban Design program. And Eli Portillo covers economic development for the Charlotte Observer. Y'all, thanks so much for the hour.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
I'm Michael Tomzik. Big thanks to Aaron Kiever for producing this show.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our engineer is Joey Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website.